Anyway.
Saraswati. He was a direct disciple of Prabhupada.
Thank you, David. Well, yes, it's very auspicious tonight. So, because the whole week has been so unusual and miraculous. On our way down, I was looking for a present for my associate in Texas. I was trying to get a birthday present for the person. And couldn't decide what to buy the person. We stopped different places. And all of a sudden, we were coming along outside near Gila Bend. And I said to my friend who was driving the van, stop, there's a place right here. You're going to get gas. He says, oh, no, the gas station is further down. I says, no, there's one right here. Stop. And he pulled over into the side of the road, and there's a gas station. I don't know if you know the place, it's called Cosmo, what? Gas station and Cosmo restaurant, right on the way through to Tucson. Stopped, and we got in the place, buying gas. And he had a little store on the side. And I saw the present. It was a brass crucifix. When I pick it up, somehow it didn't ring a bell completely. It was ideal, yet it didn't fit. And I said, well, tomorrow is crucifixion, it don't fit, something wrong. And I turn around, and on a shelf behind me is a little dish plate with the Last Supper painted into it. And I said, perfect. And as I reached it, I could feel the vibration, and the price was so appropriate, I started to laugh. We were getting something so beautiful, almost peanuts. Yeah, it was very, very... But the person who the present was for would appreciate having it and discovering it on a day like yesterday. That was so amazing about it. And now tonight we're discussing one of the most unusual moments in life on Good Friday. What's it all about? Is it really the crucifixion, or the sorrow of death, or is it something that leads to the triumph of death? What are we all living here for? Society is geared to live to die, and it's not an ideal process. It's creating sickness, that you've got to live a certain amount of years, prepare to retire, to phase off, and be placed in the soil. And look for some nebulous region in the heavens and don't know if it's actually there. Then you can go along through life with tremendous conviction it's there, but the real test is when you lie down and die. And then here we celebrate and remember a life that lived on the planet and is gone. And yet the challenge is not today. The challenge is day after tomorrow, what happens? The triumph of death. But it's not so much the triumph of death that is what we're looking for. What we're looking for is how to live and not live to die. All through the centuries, men live to die. And took out his vengeance on his fellow man in order to eliminate him, so he wouldn't have to face him. And yet, here comes along an incident and triumph over death. And before that incident took place, there was another incident where the man Jesus raised another person from the grave, showing that living to die isn't really the goal of life. Why raise another dead man from the grave if living to die to find God is the true purpose? Don't make sense. It's not valid either. But living to live, to encounter God now in your immediate life, is the real challenge and the real experience. Yogananda used to say, everything else can wait, but the search for God cannot, because it's a conscious now experience, not something nebulous and far beyond in time. If you can't encounter it now in the waking state and really have the understanding and the assurance of how it relates, you don't have anything. Give you an example. If we're all lying down dead in this room and God walks in and says, hi folks, what do you want? Your breath back? The power to perform miracles or some possessions to make you the wealthiest person in the world? What would you choose? You sure want your breath back? It didn't look like much. It doesn't sound like much, right? Compared to performing miracles and having possessions. Yet, you cannot perform a miracle if you don't breathe. And you can't own anything if you don't breathe either. And then, the real encounter with God is where? Is it in death? Or is it in life? When you understand where the real encounter is, then you understand why Jesus said, my God is the God of the living and not of the dead. Meaning, living to die has no assurance that's the ideal way to function. But living to live is ideal. It's unique. Because it assures its own self. It guarantees its own self. And the resurrection is an indication of a guarantee. But more than that, that principle is in nature. The butterfly is a model of it. The butterfly came before man because his environment was created for him to live in, man. If you make man before you make his environment, where would you put it? But you have to make your environment first in order to function in it as a man, male or female. But then, you can't have someone in the sky constantly regulating you and directing you how to live. It won't make any sense. You'd have to place the laws of nature around you to allow you to discover by trial and error. And that's what's so beautiful about it. That each one of us is carrying his own cross and not the other person's cross. Pick up your cross and follow me. No, pick up mine. He picked up his today. Each one of us is carrying their own particular confrontation with life. Not living to die in the confrontation, but living to live in the now. Each one of us. wherever you are, whatever you're doing, that's the moment of the confrontation. And it's the moment of living to live. So, by leaving a butterfly as a model, and the butterfly is a caterpillar, a worm, who eats its way through life, spins a cocoon, which we call a shroud, and emerges a different creature. Of all the creatures that can fly, there is none more beautiful than a butterfly. Yet in my years of research, I have never found a rotten butterfly. And I have deliberately squashed up caterpillars and checked them to see how they rot. And squashed up butterflies and compared them. And I've never found rotten butterfly, but I found rotten caterpillars. Telling me, without doubt, that life is for living and not to run from it. And it's in that process, when I look at the caterpillar, I realize it's tissue. And I look at my own body, it's tissue. I am made of that same model. But I have one advantage over that caterpillar. I can mock up my opportunity with my mouth. But he doesn't have to. He eats his way and becomes a butterfly. But I can make all kinds of mistakes with my words. Whatever I say to myself, I get sick or I get healthy. The caterpillar doesn't do that to itself. So that's my disadvantage and my advantage. How to regulate my spoken word to warrant the result of the process, which is eternal body or non-decomposing body, or take it with you and you pass on into another realm. Now, it's not an imagination. It's an actual fact. We are already designed for it. But our spoken word prevents us from experiencing. When we say we are living to die, we phase out. When we say we are living to live, we can leave the body as testimony of a non-decomposing organism that would defy the thinking individual, or we can leave them an empty coffin and wonder where we went, like Brother Jesus did. He left us an empty hole in the wall, and he's gone. But is he invisible or visible, or is he gone? That's the question. He isn't gone, but he's invisible and visible at command performance. Meaning, he is here with us. We have to make the attempt to want to see the living in the living, and not the living in the dead. All around us, we think we're seeing living people. But really, 99% of the time, people around you who appear to be living are thinking of dying. They're thinking of what they're going to do when they get 60 years of age and phase off out of life. So they're already dead, electrically and magnetically. They're just occupying space chemically. But if they're living to live, they have this tremendous power available to them to be in the world and not of the world, to be seen and not to be seen. Now, it may sound far-fetched, but it's not. There's a book called The Incorruptibles. There's over 300 case histories. I put it as a one case history for each day of the month or year. And 80% of the case histories are women, of non-decomposing bodies on record. So you see, it has nothing to do, because who lives to die most of the time? in our modern society. You ever hear a woman saying she's living to retire? We always hear the best thing, but he's working hard to retire, right? So the percentage of the male body is phasing out by the wrong programming. All the woman says is she's trying to hang in there. We got to change our programming. We better have, because it's not practical and it's producing more sickness. The resurrection is not a far-fetched process. Every religion has its evidence, but more so people who don't belong to no religion, who merely realize by virtue of trial and error, by the process of being practical moment to moment, are arriving in that state. Churchianity has nothing to do with realization of God. Realization of God is a personal interaction with life. You are the living temple. You are the living church. It's not some building like this that you go to on a Sunday. If God was to rest, what would happen to us? We'd be in a bad place. He can't turn off this equipment called the universe. He's got to be everywhere. So he's his own devil. By playing his own devil, he tests his own creation. But we never talk of it that way because it's not taught to us that way. But once we begin to realize and live in it, we begin to realize that God is and always will be, not a person sitting on a throne. A principle that has become the universe, locked up in man, to talk back to himself. That's the funny part of it. Of all the creatures in the world to worship God, they know it innately. Man is endowed with individuality to talk to himself. He has to convince himself, and that's the uniqueness of it. By becoming his creation and taking the role of man, which is flesh, and setting up individuality in order to give it a sense of uniqueness, individuality is the process by which the Creator talks back to himself. Now, when you're awake and you're looking at me right now, you have individuality. And you feel different. You may accept what I say or reject it, because you're awake and you're hearing me talking to you in English. And you're using your memory training because you're programmed to English, therefore you comprehend what I'm saying. Well, I look oriental, so if I spoke to you, you would understand what the hell I'm saying to you. Right? So, there you go. What the hell is that guy talking? I don't remember, you see? Our words now suddenly lose their sense of value. And their individuality has a problem. Now, all of us go to sleep at night. When you're sound asleep, do you know if you're a man or a woman? No matter if you spoke Chinese or English or French. You see? But God, he ain't gone no place. He's still holding us together, allowing us to breathe, and if we don't wake up, it's over. Who are you going to tell? That's facts. You got to live it every day. From the dawn of creation that we know the universe began to when it ends, midnight eternity, that's a long time. So he's not going out of business. But he is providing a unique process by which his individualized manifestations can be permanent and not resolve itself back into a unified field. He wants us to be permanent. by giving us individuality, by allowing us to experience trial and error, to discover living to die or living to live. And living to live is, to him that overcometh, I wouldn't say both a second time, but I make him a pillar in the house of the Lord, incorruptible. Or the option of that is to appear and disappear at will, still not corruptible. You know what I mean? Look what you got. When you begin to realize it, your best friend. Self-love, not narcissistic, cosmic. No greater love than he would lay down the selves for his fellow man. But greater love is no he who can recognize the God in himself. That's the greater love. Because I can't love you like myself. I can only love you as myself. It's a vast difference. See, love the Lord thy God with all of the mind, not part of the mind, so you can't sleep, you know. You can't die. That's the end of the mind. That's not all. If you're going to love him at all, you got to be what? Alive, awake, and alert, and enthusiastic, right? And with all your heart, it's got to be pumping. Conscious now. All of your strength, the respiratory rate, it's got to be involved. And soul, that's your individuality. You don't have soul. You are soul. If you have soul, it's preposterous to ask the body to save it. But because you're individualistic in the creative process, you can use your individualism to exalt your reality and bring out the soulness of which is God in you. Make it a permanent principle to him that overcome it. Overcome this flux. You won't have to do it a second time. We may be our 100 million second time right now, waiting to make the transition. But I'm making a pillar. A pillar is a structure, something that doesn't change in the house of the Lord, in this whole creative process. So the only way we can become permanent would be like a butterfly emerging out of a caterpillar. The incorruptible. But as we achieve this incorruptible state, we have the individualism still locked up in us to go back and forth in the universe, being visible and invisible on command performance. For that reason, early man created his communication by saying, I believe in the communion with the saints. That's a vast difference to say, I believe in the communion with that spirits. The saint was once a living human being who went through the transition of going from visible to the invisible and from breakdown to non-breakdown. Therefore, he has no hang-ups. And he has no games to play. He's not here to take advantage of you or try to get you into God. He's here to remind you that you have God in you. The psychic may not. He can be carried away and fooled. He's the moth that flies to the light and get burned up. The butterfly is different. It doesn't fly to no light to get burned up. Emerges out of the caterpillar by the process of slow, gradual anguish of eating its way and come out a beautiful creature flying. That's the transition of the true person. That's the path that the great man Jesus came to show. His life is that model in human form, taken from the cosmic laws laid up in the caterpillar to the butterfly. All the great souls that demonstrate this are his brothers and sisters. Because the Christ principle is locked up in you. That's why he said, in simple language, the things I do, you do also, but not greater than me, right or wrong. I know it's wrong, because if he said that, then I would say, right, Brother Jesus, you're the only one and true Son of God, and I don't believe it. And not a single soul, I throw myself down here, because you are number one and always will be number one. But he never said that. He said, the things I do, you do also. That's equality. And greater things shall you do, which means the option to be free, like he is free, is locked up in you, if you grasp it and apply it. Because he grasped it within himself and applied it. He grasped the greater quality, the greater power locked up in himself. Now, we have to grasp it. And we, when put into simple language, it simply means we have to grasp the desire to live, and not live to die. Living to die is not the Christ state. Christ state that will offer you death and it dies in itself can be a Christ state. It has to offer you life and remain as a living principle in itself. If God is life and God is in everything and endows you and I with individuality to experience this unity, then it has to offer you life. It can't offer you death. But it must test you with this condition called death to see if you're willing to take a chance with your individuality at the conscious level. Unconsciously, when you're sound asleep, you wouldn't know. That happens to you from the time you're born. You're unconscious. And you grow through your life, part of it, unconscious. Or you may go through the whole life with that portion of unconsciousness, never tapping in, never finding out what really occurs in that period of your life. Who are you? What are you doing here? What am I believing? Or what am I actually trying to experience? Vast difference. What I believe versus what I actually am are two different things, like night and day. I can believe in a lot of things, but it will turn out it may be wrong. Then I'm destroyed with my illusion. What I actually am is not going to fool me, because that's exactly what I'll always be. Now, I am atomic energy. I ain't going no place. Ancient man call it spirit. Modern man call it cosmic force. Whatever you want to call it, it ain't going no place. It is. Like it or not. So when Jesus said, you see me, you see the Father. You see this body, you see the cosmic principle. I and the Father are one. This individuality and this cosmic principle are one and the same thing. We ain't going no place. You're stuck with them. Two things equal to the same thing are themselves equal to what? Newton's law? One another. You and I? This? All one and the same. But at different levels of expression called individuality. The realization is your moment-to-moment encounter. I'm not here to mold you into anything. I'm here to find who I am. You are here to find out who you are. But we could be locked into a long-time argument how we will mold each other and hate each other. And yet when we fall asleep at night, all the mauling is over and all the hatred is over. And if we never wake up, what did we learn? Nothing. Because we're back right where we started to find out what we are when we're sound asleep. See? That's why Paul quit trying to go around converting people. And you know why he quit? It's when he realized that he couldn't control his internal life. So he said, I rebuke you in your rejoicing. You can go around rejoicing you're converting these Jewish people to become Christians. I quit because I live and die daily in the Lord right now. I don't know of any other process. I found out this is where it's at. Not trying to convert. I can't make a rose into a daisy. A rose is a rose and a daisy is a daisy. They both have to integrate in their own self. You have to integrate inside, I have to integrate. At the process of life and death, at the process of breathing. We come in this world, cut the cord. If we breathe on time, they keep us. We don't breathe on time, they bury us. Start all over again. You're lucky. You think of it, you've made 20 years, 40 years, 50 years, 60 years. Oh God, lucky. Because consider all the belief systems that preceded you before you got to this point where you could really accept yourself for what you are. It's pretty rough. You're more concerned now, not what you believe, and it's no derogatory condition to discard it. It's no loss. It's what you actually are now, what you are to yourself. That's what you got to work with. So once you actually accept you and the Father are one, the comedy of it is that it makes life much more simple. The simplicity of it is that you're loving your enemy for the first time for what they actually are. You ain't got no more enemies. Who is your enemy now? Your belief systems are your enemy. Not you, not the other person. You come back to yourself. So you re-resurrect yourself. You revitalize yourself. And you begin to live. I don't know how many people read the autobiography of a yogi, but Yogananda, when his teacher supposed to have died, he was torn up like every other person would be as a human being. And yet when the teacher comes back and greets him, he thinks it's an apparition, and he rushes up to greet the teacher and hugs him, and the teacher says, hey man, let go, you squeezed the hell out of me. This hurts, you know. This is the point that you're going to, well, you know, like Thomas reaching out for Jesus, touch fella, make sure. And he comes through the door and eats with them and says, bye-bye, and goes through the wall. He doesn't come through the door, he comes through the wall. These are the things that make people realize what the atomic principle is. We have had a lot of pseudo experiences, but the genuine experiences are always genuine. That's why your churches decided to set up a difference between the psychic experience and the actual spiritual experience. And the prayer is, I believe in the communion of saints. Forgiveness of sins means the correction of my own misapplied decisions. There are no sins here in this world, but misapplied decisions. I have to accept that I must make decisions. I can make incorrect ones or correct ones. I have to live out the incorrect ones just as the correct ones. So assuming the responsibility to correct them is my cross, or like you say, burden, not yours. And all realized people begin to realize that in the end, that once they accept the actualness of living to live, there really is no sin. It's just trial and error learning. You're learning by trial and error. So you make a mistake to compare, not to make it again. Now, to have life without mistakes, you wouldn't know where to go. But to have life, in order to make mistakes, you have something to compare in order to move it. So, when they say forgiveness of sins, meaning we give ourselves more time to correct our own self-made incorrect decisions that we have lived and have to correct it ourselves. And the saint is sane, Latin word meaning sane. He's not trying to run your life. He at least has discovered how to live life in a sane way by living to live. And the model is that they are there. They don't impose, since they are called cosmic nursemaids. You know, you hire a nursemaid to take care of your kids while they go to work. You know, so basically, when we realize ourselves, what job do we have? We're all working for Big Daddy. Then who is down here undeveloped? Your brother and your sister is another form of you. Who is down here locked up in different individualized states is the same God. Because it's life flowing in and out. And the interesting phenomenon is this. Do you think the amount of life force that's inside of you is any different in quantity in my body or anyone in the room? They have tested this already. The amount is exactly 3 ounces. From the time they cut the cord, you weigh exactly 3 ounces more after the cord is cut. And when you finally quit breathing, you weigh exactly 3 ounces less. So that 3 ounces, who it belongs to? It's God in his own creative nature playing roles of individuality. And we are stuck in our big fat ego thinking we're going to hold on. We can't hold on with the wrong programming of living to die. The ego is no asset there. But living to live, we can be blessed to have the reward of keeping that process in the mechanism that no longer breaks down. The very same oxygen that keeps us going in living to die suddenly becomes an asset in living to live. Now, if Jesus and all these great men didn't come to teach us to live, we wouldn't be celebrating the next 2 days, because that's the evidence we have. It's in the next 2 days how we accept these laws and look at it, what is open to us. 2,000 years ago, we couldn't comprehend it. We're only 14 more years from the year 2000. We've all the equipment around us to validate that man is eternal if he learns to live to live. But if he learns to live to die, he has to repeat the process over and over. But since this is not a mass exodus to God realization, but it's a very individualistic process, each one has his own cross to carry. I can't carry yours. But whoever arrives at that process and is established becomes the cosmic nursemaid. See? Because what other love can we be applying once we arrive? We can only apply the love of inspiration, the love of confidence, the love of assurance, the love of guarantee to the individual who is struggling to work through their own individuality, to the one reality. So it's like a jigsaw puzzle. And realization is like a turnstile. We always slip out one at a time. So, but we got our consciousness to work with. The most important thing in this journey of now, since it's not going any place, it's called the journey of now, N-O-W. And it sounds like a journey which implies going someplace, but you're not going any place. It's a journey of coping more than going. It's a big difference between looking at it as a journey of going someplace from one place to another place. It's occurring in now, a journey of coping in the now. And since now and coping are all contained by the creative me, that's why Moses had to confront it. There is no God before me. And don't have no graven image. Don't look for any object outside of yourself that's going to represent me. Me is already locked up here. You only can point to this one. Me table. Me flower. Me leaf. You don't like it? That's too bad. He will always be flower to himself. I gotta keep telling. So I got to come to the realization. The me God is here already. And Moses would look inside and say, the burning bush is the light inside of the head. You know. Who are you? I am that I am. Well, how can any object identify itself without using the word I am? I am God. I am a bird. I am a potato. I am a dino. I am Lucille. I am. All the I ams make what? One big I am. So even Jesus had to say, I and the Father are one. You see the Father. These men understood the reality of living to live and broke away from the illusion of living to die. And that's what you call the ignorance. There's no ill. Sin. It's just ignoring and misapplying your decisions to your commitment. Yet you have to come back to correct it. That's what's so beautiful about the process. If you're a teacher and you had a student and he took an examination and he didn't pass, would you put him in the next class? Or you send him back to do it all over again? Right? So this is basically the fundamental unity that underlines all individual forms. At the individual level, we have to confront our nature by trial and error. We may make mistakes, wrong decisions, but we can't expect to go any further in understanding if we don't correct it, because you'll come back to confront us. The sooner you realize it, the quicker you get healthy. Because why? You don't feel as vulnerable no more. You don't feel trapped no more. That's why Jesus says, confess your sins before your fellow man. Confess your mistakes before others very fast. Look at it, reevaluate it, and get on the ball with what? Living now. So it's easy to resolve the anguish by talking than holding it and receding and trying to withdraw to avoid. That is living to die. More and more as we become conscious of what we are, we automatically face ourselves and the internal healing begins, because healing is already locked up in you. It's denied you when you live to die, because you already shut it out with some kind of a notion you're going someplace to get it. When you do get there, it's not there. But if you accept it's here in the now, I was locked up in the equator, me. And the individuality of I. The world may give you 6 feet under the ground and a piece of stone over your head. May you rest in peace. But the Christ principle in yourselves, the Christ peace that you realize quality of your true nature, is strength of peace, the capacity to cope with life, not to run from it, not to be afraid of it, not to panic. Just take it step by step. But you don't learn that overnight. You're born with it, like the nut is in the shell. We see it hanging on the tree. But if nobody ever told you that that is good to eat, you would never try. And you may be starving like hell and looking for the best food, and the nut tree is right over your heads. Till somebody cracks the nut shell and shows you the nut to eat. And that's exactly what is going on in our belief or our actualness about ourself. Cells have the quality locked up in it to become non-decomposing. Not by good works, but by understanding. The more you understand how you put together, the more you release the quality of the cell. Good works are an incentive, but still, if you don't understand what it's doing, you can get lost, being over good and do no good. But that doesn't say you shouldn't try to be good. It is more important that you understand what is going on in the cell, because that's the final measurement with your own nature. And you're brought there very easily by the fact that you have to breathe. It's too simple, because truth is simple, but very difficult to realize. In its simplicity, it's obvious. It's pragmatic. In the application of realization, it's very, very tedious and very, very boring. Because even if you sit down to meditate, after 10 minutes you're bored. See? That's the funny part of it. And yet, you'll work up a big sweat to break away from the boredom to go to meditate. Because you're so bored with the frustrations of life, you're looking for peace. And you do everything possible. I gotta get home to meditate, gotta get home to meditate. And after 20 hours of on the highway or there working with people, and then you get home and you plop yourself down, you find you only can sit down for 10 minutes and you're bored. Sounds familiar? Well, that's the way nature works with us. It's when we begin to understand it that we have to look at ourselves more. And it's in that way we try to understand what meditation is. All the wise men try to tell us to pray and meditate, but they lay more emphasis on the prayer than the meditation. And who did that was the churches. The emphasis of prayer over meditation was done by the churches over the centuries. Only the realized man laid emphasis on meditation. Meditation is a different process altogether. You ever pass some of those churches and see outside open for prayer and meditation? They got the big sign open. And then when you go in and ask Father, say, Father, I know we pray here, but what's meditation? He says, you come to church tomorrow and you'll see for yourself. And tomorrow you go. And all right, folks, maybe you all say a prayer for the Lord. You finish say the prayer. And then he says, now, for a few minutes silence of meditation. And I count the amount of time. They pray for about 10 minutes. And they close their eyes for half a minute. And then, okay, and they start singing another song. And so when it's over, I said, Father, is that all there is to meditation? A few seconds to close your eyes in silence? And then I realized that over the years, that what was more important was being lost. How to cope with ourselves, how to function with ourselves was lost. And the illusion was being promoted. Give an example of an illusion and the actual truth. There was a priest who lived in a town, and there was a big rain came, and it started to flood the area. So the priest began to pray to God to stop the rain. He got out there praying, and the water came up to his knee. And all the parishioners in the town saw him there praying, and they came along with the boat and said, Father, please save yourself. Come on, get in this boat and let's go to a highland for refuge. He says, no, I'm praying to God to stop the rain. You go save anyone you find that needs help. Take them to safety. He kept on praying, and the water got as far as his chest. By that time, a second boat came along, and the people said, oh, Father, please save yourself. He said, no, I am praying to God to stop the rain. You go and find people that you can save, take them to the high ground. They went off. By that time, the water got as high as his nose now. Along came a helicopter with a ladder. I said, hey, Father, please save yourself. Grab the ladder. The place is all flooded. And he shouted, no, no, I'm praying to God to save you. Stop the rain. You go ahead. Try and save anyone that you can take them to high ground. I'm praying to God to stop the rain. Finally, the water is over his head and he's standing before God. And he says, how come I'm here? I thought you'd have stopped the rain. And God said, well, I sent you two boats and a helicopter. What more did you want? You see what belief could do in a fixated state versus when the practical is all around you for you to function. And that's the problem that's happening many of us today, that we get so over fixated in the belief. I mean, the practical thing is there, we miss the truth. Not that a miracle cannot happen to pray for the rain to stop. With God, anything is possible. But I don't think God is constantly manufacturing miracles because somebody will get on his knees and pray for it. When all the other varieties of ways for man's survival and continuance is available to him, he's just got to open his consciousness and recognize the many other opportunities that are there for his survival. This is what we call it, living to live, instead of living to die. Living to die is a fixated state. Living to live is not. All your great men who've come down throughout the centuries all came to teach us to live to live. Well, coming back to meditation now, it's their main theme of living to live, what meditation really is. To some people, meditation means to close the eyes and get lost. The ancient people were very smart, and they referred to the word meditation. Their knowledge in words, that's why they call it
word puzzles. Today we know some of these word puzzles as anagrams or acronyms. M, E, D, E, A, O, M. Meditation. Meditation has Chinese letters. No, it's not. The M is the mind. And we hear this word referred to mind over matter, creative mind, and yet when we come to live it, we're lost. Why? Because we all fall asleep at night, and we don't know if we've got a mind. You don't think you dream, but then you're crazy if you do dream because nobody believes you. When you wake up, right? And if you don't wake up, you sure ain't got no mind to tell about you were there. And that's the one problem with mind. So mind has a quality that can make us strong, and at the same time it has a quality that can make us weak. The strength is that we're conscious. The weak is that when we're unconscious, we have no control. So, for that reason, creative mind is never conscious, never awake. But it's locked up in you. You don't have to awaken it. You have to lock into it. Energy is the E. Mind and energy. Chinese people use the word qi. And all those who are studying all oriental knowledge out here is the word big qi qi and all that big qi. And in the West we call it energy, force, life, creative life, creative energy, mind energy. God is breath of life. God is creative energy. Among American Indians, they call it Great Spirit. Some nations don't like to use no labels other than creative consciousness, the impersonal being, the supreme absolute. But Jesus came along, and he made it very, very intimate for one reason. He figured he was human, and human beings can't be humans if they don't have a mother or father. So in order for intimacy and personalness to make it more intense, he called that principle Father. And some people don't like it because it's too chauvinistic, so I call her Fat Her. If you want to say Father, okay, you chauvinistic girl, okay, Fat Her. That cuts out all kind of problems, but not a skinny her. See, English is a wonderful language. It can free you from all frustration and make you aware of the humor of what you say to yourself when you get locked into it. So, some people don't want to say, oh, Father, it hits out of him. So okay, our fraternity. But it breaks their anguish, their frustration, and then they start to laugh. That creative spirit doesn't have form. Jesus just happened to give it personality for his own sense of intimacy. It is body. But it's creative mind, creative energy. But it directs, we don't direct it. So we're looking at how our matrix, how we put together. Mind, energy, direction. It has purpose. Blueprint. You can't build anything or think of anything or show it to anyone without setting up a blueprint, right? Good. Therefore, all the blueprints are drawn up of all the ideas you have in mind. So they say God has a plan. That's the way we see it. Then, once you get the blueprint, the next step down is the actions that are involved in negotiating the loan. So we have this individual. There is where individuality comes in. Out of the creative self, the creative blueprint, individuality begins to manifest. Out of the water comes waves. And the waves will boast to each other, I'm a bigger wave than you. Yeah, sure, make me big. Never realizing that the wind blowing upon the water is making the waves. Not for hot air. And that's what our big ego does to us. We blow off hot air. But it still directs our individuality. We need it to give us a sense of focus. And what is that sense of focus that's so important about an individual? Thinking. Our thoughts. We call it the programming in your computer. Brand new Sony machine, never been used, plugged in, put into a dock until you program it. Same way like a child. Cut the cord, let it breathe, don't program it. What's going to do all this life? That's exactly what they did in India several years ago. In the early times, there was a certain king who lived and didn't want to believe in none of the wise men until they could prove. And he provided them young children to show him if the human being thinks on his own or is programmed from the environment. And they had the research done. And they found that when they brought the children to the king, none of them could talk other than make the sound they made when they wanted. Because no one spoke to them. They only made the sound of So programming is essential to the brain.
But no matter how much you think,
and you don't act, no good. That's the funny part of it, action. We can think, but we have to act. Now your scriptures and all your ancient writings show thought is thinking, word is conversation. And you see the big advertisement now, words are cheap, talk is cheap, then they add ER, cheaper, maybe the little telephone advertising. You ever see that? The new ads they put up? But action, thought, word, deed. Deed is action. Good. This becomes very important. Our thoughts are important to us. Our words are important to us. But I don't know of anybody who can take a bath, a blueprint bathtub yet. If you try to take a bath in a blueprint bathtub, let me tell you. Until you build that bathtub and find out if it leaks, you ain't got nothing to talk about other than conversation. And that's where the action is. That's where the testing is. The acting of living to live or living to die. That's where we're in the part company. But we don't know that until we have to expose ourselves to it. We don't know that we can think and talk, negotiate, and never build it to find out if it's going to leak. If it don't leak, that's what we have. If it leaks, then that's also what we have. So it must have a testing process. All action must be tested. You can't just take things for granted. That doesn't say you should not listen to others who rule and are able to direct you. But I'm certain Doc here, after he graduated from college with his degree, he still had to go take a state exam to find out if he's going to be accepted in the public, right? By your peers. That's a test. Action that validates your capability. We may not like it, but it's the process by which we grow through to be living to live instead of living to die. But this type of testing that's going on in us as an individual is operating at a level that we don't comprehend too much. This level is called independent or intuitive of the five senses. Meditation is a process where you test yourself independent of your five senses. And to be independent of your five senses is to be intuitive. That means your sixth sense, or a sense of equilibrium, is integrating your five senses. You're making your mechanism work in unison for the first time. You're pulling your five senses into focus. And what is it going to do when it starts to take that process, pull it into focus? Observation to observe, observation. But meditation is not a one-pointed process. It's a combination of observation and integration, which is oneness. The unified process, which the man in the East called yoga, union. He first observes and then integrates into his oneness. But what is he observing and what is he integrating that he would want to integrate with? Is the last level, noumena. Now, phenomena. He wants to integrate with the actualness of its nature, not his beliefness of its nature. Nobody would waste time trying to be one with a phenomenon. Only a schizophrenic who believes he can step in front of the car and stop it in the car runs over him. But the unified conscious person can step in front of the car and the car can't go any further than here. You don't know why. No matter how much he presses on the accelerator, the car ain't going. That's the difference between the two individuals. One thinks he can do it, the one who knows he can do it. That's why I say, things I do, you do also, and greater things shall be done. It's not that we do a common creation. So when you sit down to meditate, you are in a particular process inside of yourself. That is, you have to know how to look inside. You need direction to look inside. And so the man Jesus and all other teachers who taught it gave the first indication by telling the world, when the eyes are single, the whole body is full of light. Now, they use the word eyes. We got two, plural, right? No doubt about that. When they become single, that's the question, how can you make your two eyes one? Or make them work as one? You only have three ways. Watching straight ahead, but I'm distracted. Closing it, I'm going to sleep, but I don't guarantee if I'm going to wake up tomorrow. And I may be unconscious to the fact that I don't know if I'm a man or a woman. Or merely to close the eyes and not fall asleep. I don't have any other alternative outside of the three movements. So it's a half closed, half open, or closed and not fall asleep. So when the eyes are single, and the fact is that you can close it and it becomes single, because everything external is reduced out, and only the internal is you. But what is the purpose of having the eyes single? What is it you're trying to experience? What are you trying to actualize or go through? When the eyes are single, the whole body, not the mind now, let's say mind, the whole body, the billions of cells that are made up of atoms, the whole body is full of light. Now you may not want to believe it, but then with the advent of the microscope and with the advent of science and the nuclear bombs, you have no doubt that this is made up of atoms. It's made up of elements. And light is inside of it. When the eyes are single, the whole body is full of light. If you're in doubt, Einstein's law of relativity and the unified field says energy is equal to the mass of an object multiplied by the velocity of the speed of light squared. Familiar with that? E equals MC squared? They teach it every high school and college fellow now, if you want to graduate. Energy is equal to the mass times the velocity of light squared. And just think for one moment what power you have locked up. Even if you're looking for the creator that will solve all the problems, you've got more energy locked up in you than you're even using it. It's amazing. The amount of energy that we have locked up in our bodies, we don't even begin to use it. Yet every day you hear somebody say, oh, I feel tired. I don't feel like I have to go to work. I don't feel it. They keep complaining of what? Lack of energy? See? Your own words. And yet you've got all this energy locked up in here. And scientist comes along and tells, oh, you're only using 1/10 portion of your brain. The other 9/10 is why am I? Well, take for example, the planet Earth that we live on, diameter is approximately over 8,000 miles. And let's say, for instance, we are located here. And there's another person living over here, let's say Mr. Gandhi in India, 12 hours distance from us. And you speak. Hello, Mr. Gandhi. But you don't talk to a telephone. Those words just left your mouth. You may jump to the conclusion, well, it has no effect because all words leave your mouth. They disappear in the air. We don't hear them. Is it really valid? When we can put it on the equipment, retain it, and prove its existence. Energy is invisible. Energy is traveling. And to give us a measurement, they use the speed of light. Squared. Now, what that takes is speed of light. The speed of light is approximately 186,000 miles a second. If you take 186,000 miles and stretch it out, it takes from one end to the other end a second for that light to get there. We're not talking of energy now, we're talking of just the light. Planet Earth is only 8,000 miles in diameter. Let's take the speed of light. How many times the light can go across the earth? It would be exactly 186,000 divided by 8,000. And you're coming out more than about 23 times a second. That means your voice hit Mr. Gandhi 23 times a second. He may not know it. He may not feel it. Because, well, he's not realized. The realized person knows it. And therefore, he picks up your conversation. Well, let's say Mr. Gandhi is psychic, he will say, realize, and you call him a son of a bitch. He shall say it to you very fast before you see. Then you can understand what is happening in an exchange of energy. Funny phenomenon. That's why Jesus says, watch what you say. It's not what you put in your mouth that's going to defile you, but what you say is going to defile you, because you've got to swallow your enzymes from the very words you say, and they poison you before they get out of your mouth. So when you complain about ulcers in your stomach, try and look back at how many times you called your neighbor something that was eating it. But it didn't hurt your neighbor. Who did it hurt? It hurt your own tummy. See, law of physics, making us look at ourselves. So the wise man says, that's not a practical way to live. You can't function, you're going to break down. Let's find what is valid about ourselves and get inside so that we can turn on our true reality. Prayer unceasingly is valid. But meditation is the airplane route back to the reality of the structure. How you can make it work in your day-to-day living. Now, it's not, should be not closing your eyes in meditation. It is not meditation. That's practicing. Practicing to become collected, capable of coping when you do this. Hi, can I help you? What's wrong with you? Make a pocket out of hand if you don't like it. So okay. Bye-bye. That's where the real test is. When you can get up and walk and function with your friends, they may want you there or they may not want you there, but it is in that active movement you are living the meditation. You're living the godness, the actual quality of what that moment of peace that you gather up of closing your eyes to recognize. So the Indian man developed this technique to get peace. He sat down, pulled his legs together, closed his eyes, and in the dawn. Along comes a visitor, and they ask, what is he doing? Oh, he's meditating. Meditating, what does that do? Gives you peace of mind. You want to join? Fine. You sit down, 10 minutes, you're bored. Then you travel to another country, and you see another fellow around 5-6 o'clock in the morning, he's doing this.
What is he doing?
Oh, he's doing Tai Chi. He's learning to control the energy, and he's gaining peace of mind. And you go to another country, and you see somebody walking away. They throw them the rosary, but they walk in the courtyard, one step behind the other. Each one is doing his technique towards what? Peace of mind. The end result is what? Getting up to go live what? In the world. Not to sit down and evade it, but their approaches may be different. One man may sit down because the weather is too hot. The other one will get up and move around because the place is too cold. So with a miracle we got the little electrical unit there to give us hot and cold. So you don't have to worry if you're in India or China now. You can do all your practices right in your own home and get the strength to cope with everyday living. All peace of mind. Yeah, peace of mind. Where is it? In you, at the point of equilibrium. The point of equilibrium runs straight right through you and across you. That's why they named the fellow upon a what? A cross. Right through you from the head down is your center of equilibrium because you're what? Right foot, left foot. You got to hold your body straight upright. You got to carry your spine upright. You got to move your hands. So you have your center of equilibrium. But you can get pretty uptight, angry. How to move while awake and not be uptight and angry moment to moment is the secret of the whole process. The actual living with the now. That's the actual meditation now. The peace I give, the world don't give. The world may give you 6 feet under the ground. The Christ man is offering you the strength to live life right now. Not to run from it. Not to lie down and sleep and think you're safe and don't know who you are. You never will wake up. It's when you get up, can I really function? Can I cope without panic? That's where the thing has a value. Meditation will prove itself more and more in your favor when you get up to move. And how you recognize that it's working for you is your timing. If your timing is off, everything is off. No matter how calm you are, and your timing is off, it's off. You ain't going no place. You got a car out there, you bought $9,000 worth of what? Parts or timing? When it's not time, you ain't going no place. I don't care how many nice parts you got, it's done but antique. Very expensive antique. But if it's time, it's going to go someplace. This mechanism is the same. Today we can go to the parts bank and replace it, but not too many parts because you're hard to get. Yet, if you don't breathe on time, you're off. And when you go back to timing, you're functioning for the first time to where your environment is an asset to you instead of a deficit. Where you are, in essence, benefiting from being alive to live with, not to live to die. But you can't relate to it right away until you've made enough mistakes. So meditation is not to run from life. That's not what it's intended. It's intended that you get the strength to cope with life. That's a vast difference. So there are many techniques, and the simplest one is looking inside. Now when you look inside, it's like a movie house. You don't tell the people who have the movie house how to run their show. Because when you pay your money and you sit down in the movie house, you wait till it turns on the screen, and then the picture comes on the screen, and you enjoy it. But you know, you ever notice when you go to the movie house, you see a movie, and let's say the picture is Dracula, and he's coming to bite the victim in the movie. Look at the audience sitting on in their chair next to you. They're not on the stage, you know. They're next to you. How they are cringing from Dracula. They're more involved in their own frustrations than Dracula on the stage. All the time, Dracula is only biting the actor on the stage. He can't get off the screen. But 99% of the time, you hear the groans and screams in the theater, like if Dracula is biting them. That's exactly what happens to us when we close our eyes to look inside to the creative intelligence. We get so caught up with our previous memories, our fears and frustrations, because they come back to us in the form of geometry. Your brain stores geometry. It stores numerals and alphabet. And you look inside and you see a cat. But because you saw a cat, and because you're trained to call it cat, right away you're going to start labeling it cat. In meditation, you don't want to do that. You want to be able to close your eyes and let the memory bank tape play in front of you like a movie screen. But don't try to analyze it. Don't try to put it in categories. Just watch it. Just observe it for what it is. I don't know if anybody has seen Back to the Future. In the process, if you look back, even the boy couldn't interfere, but till there was a critical point where he felt he wanted his father to do something just to make himself a man, but yet think it. This is modification of compensation. But most of the time, you'll look back and see the whole thing playing out. And that's what reverting and all these techniques are, to get you to look at yourself. And then you can zero in on a specific condition to release it. That's the oneness. So you are, in essence, trying to gain the strength and not the panic from watching inside and becoming calm. And then you open your eyes, the important thing is to get up and function. Let's test it, because that's the last stage. I can talk to them through the face, but until we put it to a test, we don't get nothing. So let's close our eyes and find out for sure what we're doing or what we're trying to accomplish.